Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively the Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Hi, welcome to the Gospel of Kinnison, episode 23, brought to you the week of May 6, 2025. I'm your host. My name is James Kinnison's. Welcome to my personal audio journal. It's been a while since my last confession, and I'm apologizing for that in advance. Things have been rough. As many of you know, I struggle and suffer, unfortunately, with depression and anxiety. And I never know when it's going to rear its ugly head. And sometimes it's 2 days, sometimes it's 2 weeks, and sometimes it's 2 months. I don't know. It seems to have let up enough to where, even though it is a Tuesday night, and that is never when I podcast, I said, you know what? I can, so I should. And so I am. I want to start off with a brief story. Happened today. I think it's half old man story, half should be on that story show story. So I was running down the stairs because I was at work. I was running down the stairs because I had to pee really bad. And I chose that moment, or my knee chose that moment, to wrench itself in some weird way. I don't know what it did, but it did suddenly hurt to use it in its normal, like I wasn't doing anything out of the ordinary. I was just going down the stairs and my knee suddenly said, you know what? This is the weirdest thing you've ever freaking done to me. So I'm going to be painful and make it impossible for you to move. And I had really pushed it to the limit. Like a freaking toddler does. You know, when they're potty training, suddenly it goes from, you know, I'm playing with Barbies to, oh, I gotta go now, you know, and I'm 51 and I pulled that. You know why? Because I thought I was fully mobile and all I had to do was go down a flight of stairs and hit up the port-a-john there, you know, what do they call a urinal, you know, which is a terrible name for a device. Anyway. So I got stuck on the stairs and I was holding it because when you start to walk towards the bathroom, this may be TMI, but don't we kind of relax? Don't we start relaxing? Like you can sometimes, like on a trip, hold it for an hour. But when you think you're heading toward the bathroom, I think you start loosening up the muscles that are involved just subconsciously because you're like, okay, it's now time. It's time to start, you know, loosening things up and getting things ready to go. And so I was definitely in that mode subconsciously, and then I couldn't move. And I'm like, I am going to pee my pants on the stairs. And I started going through my mind. I could imagine myself hobbling not even hobbling, just texting or calling my boss and saying, I have to go home. And he would be like, why? And then I hurt my knee. And I couldn't make it to the bathroom and I peed my pants. And I was like, I can't do that. And I can't walk past all these workers, all my friends and stuff at work eventually I got to move, right? And why should it be wet? So I started against all the odds, I'd love to say I got down on my hands and knees and started, you know, what do they call that? Would the Marines do it underneath the barbed wire, just crawling? But I didn't. I kind of hobbled and barely put any weight on my right knee and just barely made it, dude. I was hobbling as fast as I dared and the pain was going. And all I was thinking about were characters in movies that are walking and they're fighting someone and they're walking and somebody shoots them in the arm and they hardly even flinch. And there was this one episode not Alone. What's the stupid show called? Not The Island. Oh my gosh. They go on a plane and they crash. And it's called, I can't remember. Anyway, there was a character in this show that I can't remember because I'm old. And he got hit in the head really hard, but he overcame his nausea and his head pain to get out of this hole. And I was like, even back then, I was like, dude, I don't think I could do that, but I should aspire to be a person who could shake it off. And so in that moment, I pulled inspiration. I believe the character's name was Saeed. Yeah. And Lost. That's the name of the show. And he overcame some nausea and some gunshots or something. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it impressed me so much. I'm like, dude, I don't think I could do that. But today I did. I proved it to myself that I didn't get shot. You know, I didn't get the wind knocked out of me or my brain addled or anything like that. I just simply had to go potty like crazy and was able to overcome the pain of my knee. And it's been hurting all day. And it is, but it not as bad as when it first wrenched itself, though. Because I literally thought, I'm going to stand here on the stairwell and I'm going to create a little waterfall effect down the last three of the stairs there, the last three steps. And somebody's going to have to clean it up. And so I went through all those thoughts. I got to tell the boss. I got to face people. Somebody's going to clean it up. I can't let this happen. And so I basically hopped on one foot with the other foot just kind of dangling. It was a weird kind of step because it was like I was putting most of my weight on my left leg, so I was bending, and I pushed my right leg out like at a 45-degree angle and then kind of leaned towards it and then quickly reset my left leg. So I was kind of hobbling, like pivoting off that foot rather than putting any weight on it. And so I was shorter than normal because I was squatting a little bit, if you can imagine, because you have to push up the leg, pivot off the bad one, and then plop back down the first one. And I'm glad I lost, you know, so much weight because, first of all, the weight would have wrenched my knee plumb off. I think I would have I would have been, you know, those Barbie dolls that you can bend their legs and their knees crack. I think I would have been like that. It would have cracked something. And then secondly, I was able to pivot. I don't think I could have pivoted properly if I was as portly as I had been previously. Yep. That was right off the top of my head. So, I don't know. I hope that brought a smile to your face, a little laughter to your life. You know, maybe you have a story you'd like to share. I do a podcast called That Story Show, if you didn't know. And we share stories like that all the time. But last time I recorded, I was reporting about work and I was telling about this new girl that drove me crazy. And I don't know what I called her, but I'm not going to name her. But I do want to tell you the rest of the story because I think I mentioned that I made it a matter of prayer. Lord, please help me to deal with this girl because if I talk to her about her annoyingness, I'm going to be angry and I'm going to do it wrong and I'm going to make her cry or something. And I really had to work through my anger because I surprised myself. I think I mentioned that I know how to deal with people who hate me. I know how to deal with people who don't love God, but dealing with someone that just straight up is the most annoying person in the world, that was that was new territory for me spiritually and emotionally and mentally. Just for those of you that may have missed the last episode, she was a person that would narrate everything she did. would say anything that came to her mind out of her mouth all day long. Okay. That was the most annoying thing. But she would also sing. She would whistle, which is the worst thing you could do to me is whistle in my presence. I hate whistling. I don't think God likes whistlers. If you whistle while you work, you better work way away from me. But she would whistle. And so what I did is I got over it because I talked to God and God said, James, she's like a child. I said, yes. Ooh, God's on my side. We're gonna rail on this girl together in prayer time. And he's like, what did you do in children's ministry when you had a child that needed something extra? I was like, I love them more. And I was more patient with them. And I gave them what they needed. And I already know where this is going. And so I started being friendly instead of being quiet and just, you know, seething over there because she sat right next to me. But I would ignore her and just bear it, you know. But I found that when I let go of the anger, because the reason I was getting angry is because I imagined I put things on her that may or may not have been there. Okay. And here's what I'm talking about. If I were to do those things, I would be doing it to get on people's nerves or to be rude. You know why? Because I think of myself in the third person quite a bit. And I think of how I'm coming across to others. I read the room. You know, before I communicate with a friend of mine that sits behind me, I'll look over and see if he's right in the middle of something. When I go up to another worker that's downstairs and I need their help, I'll say, hey, when you get to a stopping point, can you help me with something? And then I'll stand there and wait for them. And then they are more than happy to help me because I think about stuff like that, right? So what I was doing is I was putting my personality and my way of doing things on her and then saying, for me to do what she's doing, I would have to go against all of those convictions that I have and do this on purpose. And that's why I was getting angry. Because she gave little sister vibes. Because little sisters do that stuff. They do it on purpose, right? They do it to get on your nerves. They do it to chide you, to get a reaction out of you. And I assume that's what she was doing. She knew what the right way to act was, but she was doing it to get on my nerves. And I was taking it personally because I had put that purpose on her. But the truth was, she was a little immature. She was really clueless as to how she was coming across. She wasn't thinking anything about other people. And so she wasn't doing it consciously. She was doing it unconsciously. Now, was it still rude? Yes. Was it still intentional though? No, it wasn't. And so I finally came to terms with that and I gained a peace. And I found that when I let that go and quit putting that on her, I found myself able to put her into the background. Her noise and her whistling and her singing and her narrating everything she was doing. Oh, I'm going to click on this and I'm going to move this over here. Oh, you know, the exclamations that she would make that would kind of get my, you know, I didn't know what she was responding to. Is there a bug that's about to land on me? Is something on fire? You know, it would get that kind of effect out of me. But once I started chilling and really took that off, that purpose that I had installed on her, when I took that away, I was able to put her in the background noise, like the air conditioner or people in the other office chatting with each other or someone on the phone. I was able to put her in the background and she didn't bug me as much. And that was because of prayer. I totally believe that. God helped me to change my side of things because I can't control her. I didn't want to. But that being said, once I got over my anger, I knew then I would be able to say something. But I wanted to wait until it was necessary. And there came a time because of the tariffs that we had a lot of price changes to make on the website. It was very tedious, very detailed work, very specific, SKU numbers that I'd have to pull up, change specific products by a certain percentage. There was a lot of math going on, a lot of details. And about a quarter of the way in, I said, I'll just say ma'am instead of her name. Ma'am, I said, when you talk out loud, I said it this way. I said, because I thought it through. I said, I'm finding it very hard to concentrate with you talking out loud, period. Do you think you could stop? And she says, I don't know about that. And I said, why? Because you're rude or you just don't care? She said, excuse me? I said, is it because you're rude or you just don't care? And she acted like she was going to step to me that first time with the, I don't know about that. And what did you say? Because she pretended like she didn't hear me the first time. And she says, no, it's because I do it unintentionally. I don't do it consciously, she said. And I said, you know what? Honestly, that helps to hear that. It really does. So then I stopped and I went back to my work. And consciously or unconsciously, she was able to not speak, whistle, or sing for the entire rest of the day. So she was capable of it, right? It's not like I was asking for her to do something that she couldn't do. I felt really weird about it though. I felt like I needed to protect myself because she was someone that would throw around phrases like gaslighting. Like one time she told me she was 28. And so 2 or 3 weeks later, some, casual conversation came up and I said, well, you are 28. And she says, I'm 27. I'll be 28 in a couple of months. And I'm like, well, you told me you were 28. Where else would I come up with that? Why would I only be a year off? I mean, you told me you were 28. You're gaslighting me. That's a very serious phrase to me because it involves making someone feel like they're crazy in order to make what you're doing or saying seem to make logical sense. And it's a manipulation tactic. Okay. So I was a little scared that this girl could take an older man, asking a younger lady to do something and take it out of proportion. Like he's trying to control me. She could throw around something like, what do they call it? Toxic masculinity, something like that. So I immediately, when I got home, I wrote a long email explaining everything that I just explained to you guys. And I said, I never said another thing. Matter of fact, I've decided not to follow up and ever say anything again. And I said, now I predict that she will go back to doing what she was doing. I said, then I will come to you and ask you what you can do about it for me. And, there it is. I told him about the months of dealing with it. And I told him about, how I got over my issues and how I addressed them with her. And I wasn't trying to control her or anything. Anyway, long story short, a couple of days later, she did come back to work. And continued to do whatever the freak she wanted. So now I knew I don't think it was the case before, but from then on, can we all agree that she was doing it and knowing she was being rude and knowing that she was just going to be herself no matter what it meant to anyone else? Can we all agree now that things had changed? You know, whereas before she may have done it unconsciously, now she was doing it knowing that it bothered me and still did it. So anyway, I go into my boss's office a couple of days later and he's like, you know, how you doing? And I said, I'm just trying to get through each day. It's a struggle, I'll be honest. And he says, well, hang in there till Friday. Because he says, just hang in there till Friday. I'm like, okay. So what does that mean? Because I had submitted with that email I mentioned earlier, I had also said, you know, look, I don't want to bring drama without bringing a possible solution. I said, there is a coworker that she constantly is having to walk up and down the hall to see. And I think they would work better closer to each other. And there is a gentleman who does art who would like to be next to me. So a simple desk swap would solve a lot of problems, I think. So Friday, I wait for Friday. Oh, it seems like it's going to take forever. So I go in there and I look at the desk, assuming that the computer will be moved, that the papers will be moved, and the desk looks exactly the same. And I'm like, dadgummit. They didn't move her. I was like, okay, all right. So whatever I expected, you know, wasn't happening. So I sat down at my computer and I booted it up and I start to work. And I'm like, you know, she comes in a half hour later than me. So I've got a little bit of time. And one of the sales managers comes by and he's like, oh, did you hear? Because I had stayed home on Friday. That's right. I couldn't handle it anymore. I was going crazy and I was starting to get really depressed. And so I stayed home Friday and I come in on Monday and that's when I saw the desk had not changed. And so manager guy comes by and he says, did you know that on Friday that they fired ma'am? And I'm like, oh my gosh. Because my initial reaction is that's not good to get fired. I hope I didn't get her fired. And so I found out from my boss that it was because she wasn't doing things their way. She was doing things her way, which fit her personality. She was very much a person that was always trying to guess ahead when she was being trained. Like they would say, we need you to click here. No, don't go past that. Go stay right here. Because she would try to anticipate what they were going to tell her. She didn't take criticism well, and they were trying to teach her methods. And I remember them constantly coming up to her, asking her for a document that was supposed to be filed in this filing system. And she would pull up this big, messy pile of papers and say, well, I do it this way because I do it based on priority. And so I got told by my boss, she was let go for not doing things properly the way she was trained. And I was like, whew. That's good news. Now that that's over with, and now that I've also felt sorry for her because this is going to be her life where she gets a job, can't be trained, won't do it the right way, and then gets fired over and over and over, you know, and I feel that and I hate that for her. But after that, then I was like, thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. Because obviously the problem got fixed. And I have been enjoying so much quiet. And one thing I did, because one of the annoying things about her, and it wasn't her fault, is that she had a clickety keyboard, a gaming keyboard. I don't know who bought this for an office, but it existed and she had it. And she was a heavy typer, and that thing would click and clack all day. It would just be one of the things that would drive me crazy. And so what I did since she was gone is I found a very silent keyboard in the back closet, and I traded it out. And so now the clicky-clacky one is hidden away. And there's a quiet one waiting for the next employee. So at least if they're a whistler or a singer, they won't be a clicky-clacker. So anyway, I didn't, you know, God answers prayer. Not always the way you want. I usually get big fat no's. But this one, he fixed me. And then he fixed the situation. And so I'm grateful. I hate it for her. I hate that she's going to struggle. I hate that for her. I really do. But I'm glad that I no longer have to, be accosted by her annoyingness. Anyway, ma'am is gone. Completely new topic. I had the worst week last week. It's been rough for a while, but it came to a head last week. And because last Friday I couldn't go into work. I got up on time and I just couldn't see myself getting ready, going in, struggling. And I haven't felt that way in a little while. It's been a little while since I just straight up felt like I couldn't even make the effort to fight against myself and make myself go. So I'd already made a deal with Jen that, you know, she said that if I need to talk in the morning, that she would wake up and talk to me. So she's like, do you want to talk? And I was like, no, it's not even like that. I did end up talking to her and telling her how it felt, but it didn't help. But after that Friday, over the weekend, I was like, I can't do that again. I got to go in. And so I said, last podcast, I mentioned experimenting with caffeine and I talked to my psychiatrist and she's like, well, yeah, use caffeine to counteract the sleepiness that the medicine's putting you through. She almost said it in a way like, you're not doing that already. And I hadn't been, but, I decided over that weekend that I couldn't do that Friday thing again. So, I told my wife, I'm like, next time I get in that situation, you don't have to do anything. I'm just kind of telling you so you'll know, like an accountability partner kind of thing. I am going to down an energy drink the next time I feel that way. I'm going to use that energy to get through the shower and get myself there. Because once I'm there, I'm typically fine. It's like back when I was in children's ministry. Getting up, getting ready, getting there, getting set up, all of that was the worst. Once the kids showed up and it was time to perform, it was fine. It was fine. And then the moment the last kid left, boom, down to the bottom of the, you know, the hole again. So that's what I did all last week because I woke up Monday and I was absolutely miserable. I ate my breakfast. And I called my boss and I said, I'm going to be 20 minutes late. He says, is everything okay? I said, yeah, I just had some things come up. And I didn't tell him that the thing that came up was that I needed to drink a soda or an energy drink to be able to make it through the shower. But I gave myself some extra time because better late than never, right? And I've been drinking Ghost. So Ghost energy drinks are interesting. They don't have artificial coloring. They use natural caffeine from coffee. So it's not lab grown or whatever. And it has zero calories. And I pour it out of the, I'm not supposed to have soda. So I pour it into a cup and then I swish it back and forth between cups until it's out of fizz. And then I pour it back into the can because I love drinking out of a can. And I did that every day last week, and it got me through the week. I didn't do it every morning. A couple of the mornings I was able to get up and get out of the bed. I still brought a can with me, and I drank it after lunch typically to get me through the rest of the day because I would really, really, really want to go home. I'd really want to go in there and tell him, I got to go. I can't handle it anymore. I got to get out of here. And I would drink the energy and it would suddenly help my mood and everything. And so even though I'm a little bit against caffeine, using it medicinally seems to have really helped me over the hump, because Wednesday was the worst of all the days. I was so bad by Wednesday that I was getting paranoid. Like, I completely believed while I was sitting there at work that my boss could see my computer screen and that he was judging everything that I was doing. Even though I was working, I was sitting there and I suddenly couldn't even find, you know, I was doing images and stuff like that or building the website, and I was thinking about it so much that I couldn't find the menu items that I needed. Like, I was struggling to find where Transform was or, you know, Align or any of that kind of stuff. And it was making me look like I was brand new to the program. And I'm like, he's watching and he's judging and he's going to fire me because I don't look like I know what I'm doing. And then when I got home, I was laying in bed because I take a nap when I get home from work every day except today. Today is the first day since I started work 6 months ago, 7 months ago, whatever it's been, that I haven't napped as soon as I got home. But Wednesday I laid down and I didn't have the covers on. My back was exposed. I was on my stomach and I really felt like somebody was going to get me. Paranoid. Never been paranoid before. But I felt like somebody, it sounds crazy, was going to hit me with an axe. Like, I was scared. Like, I wanted to look, but I was like, this is stupid. It's not true. It's not real. It's just feelings. I knew that. So I just forced myself to just lay there until I nodded off. But I really felt exposed. I really felt vulnerable. Like, somebody could have got me or somebody could get me. And then at work, like I said, feeling like he was watching my screen. The last time I felt like that, I don't know if I mentioned it, but it was back when I was working the hat job in that embroidery shop. And I thought my boss, who was very mean, was watching me work. And I'd never had paranoia before that, and I hadn't had it since. And that was so slight that I didn't even know to call it that, but it's the last time it happened was back then. So things were bad, but I don't know. I haven't been walking in the mornings. I haven't been able to get up at 6. Dadgummit, even though it's been worse than it has been in 8 years. I've made it to work every day, clocked in, clocked out, lasted the whole time except for that Monday when I came in 15 minutes late. Not even 20. So success, you know, take it where I can find it.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Positive thing about work, other than quiet, you know, having quiet now. I write articles for the website, and I don't know anything about DTF printing, which is what my company does. Screen printing products and DTF products, direct to film. Basically, it's a different way to print on t-shirts. You print the design on a piece of paper, and then they make the back sticky, and then they use a heat press to transfer that onto a t-shirt. If you have a Cricut, you may have done something similar with vinyl, where you cut it out and weed it and put it on a t-shirt. You know, maybe gold foil, silver foil, maybe a color, something like that. Well, imagine being able to print on the vinyl beforehand and then press it into a shirt. It is more vivid and more colorful than screen printing could ever be. I don't know that it lasts as long, but it enables printers to do shorter runs, meaning like two or three shirts instead of a minimum of 24, which is typical for screen printing. Setup is a lot easier. Anyway, we sell DTF printers. We sell manual screen printing printers and automatic screen printing printers. But I don't know anything about DTF printing. I know a little bit about screen printing because I worked in a screen printing shop years ago. So I write articles about what I know about. And recently I wrote one about 10 things you need to change, or 10 things you're doing wrong or might be doing wrong to hurt, you know, or to help, or you need to do to help your online presence for your print shop. And I put it up and I pushed it out as a press release. And a couple of websites hit back and said, yeah, we want to use your post on our website and in our publication. And the same thing happened today. I put out another blog post about how to name your shop, how to name your shop, your brand new shop, because I deal with a lot of customer shop names, and some of them are really bad. And some of them are really dated, or they're based off a meme that was funny at a particular time, or it's very generic and you can't tell what the business is. And so I talked about that, you know, make sure your name is going to make sense in 10 years. Make sure it doesn't limit you. If you're going to do Dorothy's Tees, what if you start printing other things like bags and hats? And, you know, would it be better to say Dorothy's Inks or Dorothy's Screen Printing or Dorothy's Textiles, whatever. And I gave a practical example at the end. I'm like, hey, let's pretend that I work near the beach and I'm only going to be doing t-shirts. And so I think I use my Google searches, and I come up and I search for an LLC to see if it matches with my name. And I'm going to go with Inkfish. Inkfish Tees. Inkfish is a slang term for an octopus. So it's a cute name. It's creative, but it's not off. It's never going to get old. It's timeless. And it's an easy logo. And I check with my state to see if it's an LLC. It's available. Inkfishtees.com is available. And it really was. I did a real life example all the way through. And so couple of places have asked if they could reprint that, and one already has, and they edited it just a little bit to accommodate just DTF shops, where mine was targeting mostly screen printing shops. But Inkfish Tees also allows me to do DTF screen printing and embroidery. So it does have, it's not as confining. So anyway, I did that, and somebody today said, we're putting it in print, and we put it up on our website and you could click through and see it. And I did. And it has my little bio at the bottom and a link back to the website that I work on, which is very important. Backlinks are a big deal with SEO, search engine optimization. And so as many links as you can get from different websites, the more your website rises. And the more that my website rises, the more my bosses love me and the more sales we get. So that's why these are important. But I did one the other day. They said, you know what? We're going to reuse this, but when we want one you didn't even promote to us. And it's called 10 Things You're Doing Wrong with DTF That You Could Fix Immediately. And I was like, cool, because I don't know about DTF. You know what I did? I used AI. I said, what are 10 pain points for DTF printers that they, you know, pain points being things that they struggle with. And I found those things, and I made a list of it, bullet point, turn it into a bullet list. What are DTF printers doing that to cause these problems, or, you know, what can be the fixes? And so I went through and I prioritized them, and I came up with 10 things and 10 solutions. And I put together and wrote this article based on that research. Like I said, I didn't write the article with it, but I did all the grunt work using it. And then I ran it past one of our DTF experts. He changed a couple of things, sent it back to me. I posted it, and they want to reproduce that in a printed magazine. And that is amazing to me because they don't know that I didn't know what I was talking about. I mean, I kind of get DTF printing. I've done it a few times. Like I've had designs and I've watched them printed and I've heat pressed them and all. So there's not a lot, you know, but there's a lot about color grading and, you know, having it print out a good coat of white on the bottom of every, I don't know. Then there's the adhesive powder and the curing and the temperatures and the timing of the heat press and, you know, all this stuff that you can do. But I made up a fake advice column for DTF printers, and they're going to print it in a real DTF magazine. And I don't know anything. So I thought that was funny. So anyway, I've been doing games at church. I'm still, you know, still doing that. And I like it fine. I found that I'm the only consistent person on second service. Every week, there's a different set of people, like a completely different set of people. I'm the only one that's consistent. And so what I have accidentally found out is I'm the only one that knows the kids and how they behave from week to week. Everybody else sees it once a month and they don't see patterns. I see patterns, and you guys know I'm a disciplinarian. I don't believe kids can learn properly unless they are behaving. Is that crazy? Maybe I'm just Gen X and out of touch, but I don't think if a kid can't listen, they can't learn. And so the way I used to overcome that in children's ministry is I did infotainment. I made it fun to listen. I made it fun to learn. But I've been there a couple of months, and there's different teachers every week. And they have different levels of skill and different levels of preparation and different levels of ability. And they don't seem to care if the kids are listening or not. And so it's up to me to go around and try to fix things. And though I was told that we just go and stand next to them, and though I was told that we don't correct them, I have found myself as the only one that is consistent doing exactly more than that. So I have kids that now hate me. They don't really. I'm working on them. They hate what I stand for because I am the funnest one there because I get to do the game. But I'm also the one that knows who's playing games, who's not listening, who's not paying attention, who needs to be separated from who can't sit next to who. I know all this and no one else does. And so I use that, and some of the kids, I just like to hate my guts, but I'm working on them. You know why? Because I found out what they want. They want to work tech. That means they want to operate the laptop. All the fifth graders want to work tech. And so it started this week. They walk up to me, one of my problem kids. He walks up, he says, I'm doing tech today. I'm like, first of all, you don't tell me what you're going to do. You ask. Secondly, I've already got a girl. I kind of bent the truth a little bit, who asked me earlier, because she didn't ask either. I had to have the same conversation with her. You don't tell me what you're going to do. You ask. And I said, I already promised it to her. So, you know, I gotta let her do it. Well, she didn't want to do it. So I called on him. I'm like, you can do it. He's like, I'm bringing my friend over. Well, this friend is the one I constantly have to separate him from. And I'm like, there's no way I'm going to let you two back here. There's no way. I said, here's what I need you to do. I need you to work with this other girl that wanted to work tech. And here's the order of the slides. Here's, you know, it was May the 4th. So they did a May the 4th be with you themed service. And I had a great little Star Wars game, and I had a little video clip that brought context to the game. I said, here's the order. I need this to play before I walk up on the stage. And after I talk a little bit, I'm going to call for this video clip. And then when I say, Mark, set, go play this 60-second countdown, the Star Wars themed, everything was Star Wars themed. And then he's suddenly gone. They said he just said he wasn't going to work unless he could have his friend. I'm like, oh, that's unfortunate because I'm never going to let him do that. So, so the other girl came back and she decided to help. And so I told her the same thing. So meanwhile, he's sitting next to his friend, the one that I didn't want him to, that I've separated him from before. And I just went up to him and I said, hey, bud, I would love to use you in tech. I think you'd do a great job. And I would love to use your friend. But you guys have got to show me that you could sit together and pay attention in order for me to know that I can trust you in tech. And I'm going to tell you what, I didn't talk to the friend. I talked to him. He got so frustrated with his friend talking to him through the whole service that he put his head down on the table. He was really, really struggling because he wanted to talk, but he knew he needed to change things. So after service, he got left. His parents did not come and get him, which usually means trouble. It usually means the parents don't care enough. There's something going on with that boy. And I'm like, well, I want to meet them anyway. So I'm like, hey, you want to go find your parents? He's like, sure. And then on his way there, he said, was there a problem with me today? I said, actually, no, you did really, really good. I said, but you need to talk to your friend. You need to tell him to straighten up. That way you can both work in tech. And he's like, oh, well, I didn't end up meeting his friends or his parents because they were busy. They were workers. They're workers at the church. Of course they are. Of course they are. But his friend's mom said, I'll take him. And I said, great. I said to him as I was leaving, I said, make sure you tell your parents that I want to talk to them about you working tech. And the friend's mom said, oh, you would work in tech? That would be a great job for you. So, dude, I've made a trap. I have a trap laid because I know what he wants and he's going to have to work for it to get it. And what am I really trying to get at him? In behavior or the ability to hear God's word? Both, really. But what it really boils down to is not for him to do what I say. What do I want? I want him to have ears and have them hear. That's all I want. There was another girl. She had headphones on during worship. And I went up to her. And I said, sweetheart, I need you to pay attention. I don't need you to sing. I don't care, but you need to put your little pens away. It's not time to color. It's time for service. And you need to take your headphones off. And she says, no, I wear these because the music's too loud. And my Gen X self rolled my eyes a little bit. I was like, okay, that's fine. That's cool. But then she had them on and she had the pins back out while the lady was teaching and it was very quiet. And I said, you need to take your headphones off. She's like, I can hear just fine. I'm like, tell me anything she said. I can't. I'm like, you're right. Cause you can't hear her. Take those off, put your pins away and listen. And she did because those headphones have become a what? An emotional support pair of headphones. They've become a security blanket. And she was abusing her little power, which is what kids do. Because you know what? No matter what you believe, kids don't come out perfect. They come out as manipulators. That's what they were born to be. That's why they cry, so that you will know to feed them. That's why they cry, so you will know to change them. And as they get older, because we do these things, they accidentally learn, if I make a lot of noise, I get what I want. And we have to slowly change them. Use your words. We'll tell them, use your words. Why? Because they will cry and pitch a fit so that they can get what they need. But we have to train them and teach them. And then once they learn their words work, what do? They start manipulating you with their words. They learn how to say no. Yeah. So they don't come out perfect. They come out like people. And they need to be taught. And you can do it nicely. You can do it with today's standards. It just takes a lot longer. And it still takes relationships. And so I still have a rule. If I don't know your name, I'm not allowed to get on to you. So I learn all the names so I can call on them. And we have kids that like to talk out loud and answer the teacher as if they're the only ones in the room. First graders are really bad about that. They just always have been. All the way through my career in children's ministry, they think it's just you and them. So what do? I some people would call it me embarrassing them in front of all the kids, because I holler out too. I say, you need to raise your hand first. And they do. And I'll go to the kid who can't stop talking, and because he just can't. He can't do it. So the rules are different for him, because I make different rules for different kids because of their abilities. He literally can't stop talking. I think he could if there were some things changed, but he really can't. So for him, I go by and say, you need to whisper. You need to whisper, because, you know, I'm going to have to separate you if you can't whisper. Because I'll use him in tech, and he wants to talk to me the whole time. And I'm like, you need to whisper. You need to whisper. We had a girl like that in my old children's ministry. She was allowed to sleep if she wanted to, because her being good was just staying in the room. Because one time she snuck out, went down to the corner store, got candy, came back, shared with her brothers and sisters. We never knew she left. So for her, staying in the room was good. So every kid gets their own measurement, you know, but I'm the only one that knows. I'm the only one that knows, because I'm the only one there consistently, and I'm the game guy. So I want to quit. I want to kind of quit. Why, James? Why? Because it's chaos. There's a lot of chaos, and I really want to teach, but I don't, because I'm not consistent. I'm not predictable. I get in bad moods, but I can still do a game. Can't podcast, but I can still pull off a game on a Sunday morning. So I want to quit, because things aren't done the way I think they should be done. And I kind of figured that would be the case. And that's why I set it up to where I'm going to just try this for a month, and then I'll come talk to you. Well, that month has been come and gone, and I kind of want to quit. And I talked to the lady that seems to do all the work, who is not the children's pastor, by the way, which is one of the reasons why I can't stand it. I said to this lady, I'm like, you know, you do all of the work. You come up with the curriculum. You put all the stuff together. You decorate. You come and set up. You do the laptop. You set all the sound effects and everything up, the slides. Do you get paid for this? And she's like, no, I do it all voluntarily. I'm like, I said, don't get me wrong. There just seems to be a lot of it that rests on your shoulders. And I assumed it was a paid position. And she's like, no, you know, and she's not being bitter. She's not bitter. I'm a little bit bitter about it. But she messaged me and she says, James, it's because I said, I worry about you. And she says, you doing the game and putting it together is such a blessing. And I'm like, dadgummit, I can't quit. So I wanted to move churches. That's one of the reasons I wanted to quit too, is I wanted to move churches, because I love the pastor. I really do. But the solution to almost any problem that he presents, it seems to be church attendance, praying and reading your Bible, but mostly church attendance. This week's sermon was on being good ground. And the solution, whether he realized it or not, was get your crap straightened out and God will be able to use you. And that's the way I've heard that preached 100 times. If you want to be good ground, become good ground, and then God will grow in you. And that's a bullcrap answer. It's not true. It's not what the story means. It's just talking about the different kinds of people and the different kinds of, and the way the word of God is able to grow in people who are ripe for harvest, to use another analogy. There are some people that are just good ground at that point. Everybody's been rocky. Everybody's been thorny. Everybody's been hard packed. And there was just a time when you became good ground and the seed grew in you and you became a Christian. And if you want to apply it to a Christian life, there's been times we've been hard-headed Christians and God can't work. There's been times we've been sinful Christians and God can't work. But, and I guess there's an argument to be made, but for, you know, working on yourself. But I've been in a place where I've suffered so bad that I couldn't help myself and I couldn't fix myself and I couldn't change anything. Just being alive hurt and sucked and was more than I could handle most of the time. Just staying alive was all I could do. And prayer was only coming from the groans in my spirit because I couldn't say the words. And I all but gave up. And God still found the good patches. And he still planted seeds. And they still became a harvest. And I know that, and I know that, and I couldn't preach it any other way. You know? Because he even said something the other day that it made a good saying. It sounded good, but it's not gospel. And he says, you can't pray your way out of something you worked your way into or you behaved your way into. You can't pray your way out of something you behaved your way into. And that sounds good because the answer is you need to fix your behavior. And then, you know, because you can't just pray it away and expect your behavior to change if you keep doing it the same way. And there's some logic to that. But there's also people that have behaved their way into a bottomless pit that they can't get away from. Maybe it's drugs. Maybe it's alcohol. Maybe it's a flaw in them. Maybe it's a mental handicap. Maybe it's a physical handicap. And they literally can't change it. They are physically impossible or mentally impossible to change. And prayer will get them out. See, I heard somebody very smart say, if you can't preach it in every situation, if you can't preach it in every country, it's not the gospel. Because it has to be universally applicable. And I agree with that. That's why the prosperity gospel is not the gospel. Because you can't go preach it in a third world country and say, if you live right, if you live by faith, God will make you rich. We all can say that your life will probably, you can't even say your life will probably improve because in some countries, your life could be in danger because you believe in Christ. Your family will give up on you and call you in and turn you in and possibly kill you if you do so in a Muslim country. That's what I hear anyway. So you can't even preach that because I would love to say your life will kind of get better because you will have purpose and you will have meaning, but you can't promise anything positive financially or any other thing. You can't say you'll automatically be skinny. You'll automatically be freed from drugs and alcohol, even though I've heard of that kind of stuff happening. You can't say you're automatically going to be undivorced. You can't say you're automatically going to be mentally well. You can't do those things. Anyway, my point is that I've heard just one too many times things that I can't agree with and can't get behind. And I want a church maybe that is a little more biblically based than opinion based and is a little more Jesus focused rather than church focused. But I don't know that such a church exists. I really don't know. A lot of the churches that I've visited outside of my own small group church that we used to meet together, that was pretty good. But we don't do that anymore for some reason. But the churches I've been to seem to be very entertainment oriented. Like they want to put on a good show. They want people to be very comfortable and they're not confrontational. And I don't want to be confronted either. But if the Bible is confronting me, I don't want you to dumb it down. Like today in Sunday in children's ministry, the story was about when the people were complaining, the people of God were complaining in this particular time, snakes came out because God had had enough and they started biting people, venomous snakes. And, God gave Moses the idea to put a brass serpent on a pole, on a cross pole, and anybody that looked at it would be healed. So there was grace. And the teacher was talking about softening it up. And I'm like, why? Why do that? Sin will kill these children. You know, I'm Mr. Inner City Boy. So I've literally seen bad habits and sin kill kids and people. Because I know a kid that gossiped about another a gang member and got shot 5 times over a gossip session. So yeah, sin kills, and it'll kill white kids too. It just might take a little longer. So I take such things, you know, warnings against sin, you know, or something you can say. You don't have to praise it and make it super scary and crap like that, like we did with kids in the 80s, and say you're going to die and go to hell or anything like that. You don't have to like make it scary, but you can still say that snakes bit people, because otherwise what's the point of the cross and the brass serpent? It's a symbol. It's a type of a precursor to Jesus and his sacrifice on the cross and looking to the cross. I mean, without hell, there's no glory in the sacrifice. You know, that's why we look at the cross and it means nothing, because we don't, we got so far away from talking about consequence that the sacrifice doesn't move us anymore. We watch, you know, the passion of the Christ, and it didn't hit as hard the second or third time. Why? Because we forgot what it was for. You know, anyway, I kind of want to go to another church and I want to quit, but I can't now, because I got to help this lady. And I don't know, but I'm not the savior of this church. I'm not there to fix children's ministry. So I'm kind of really backing off. And I'm like, James, you're not the children's pastor here. You're a guest. You're here to serve. And specifically, you're here to just do a game and to bless as many kids as possible. And speaking of blessing, I'll finish with this. We went to a restaurant after church on Sunday. And as we were walking out, somebody said, James. And I always hear people say James. So I continued walking. And this, I feel a tug at my hand and I turn around. She says, James. And it's one of the kids from children's church. And I said, hey, where are your people? I want to meet your people. And so she took me over to her table, and it was her grandma and her aunt and her brother. And I knew him too. And I'm like, hey, everybody, I'm James. And she's like, how do you know my kids? I'm like, oh yeah, I'm the new game guy. And she's like, oh yeah, you're new here. And all, and she knew about me because we came as a church, you know, a little church. And she's, oh, I think it's great. And I said, yeah, but your kids are just terrible. They are the worst. Oh, I know it, she says. You know, we're playing at this point. I said, they're always talking smack about their aunt. Oh, what does she say? What do they say about me? And I said, oh, they actually haven't mentioned you at all. It's almost like everything you do for them, they don't even care. And she's like, oh, I knew it, you know. And so we had a good time, because they're really good kids, actually. So that was special. I'm like, I'm sorry, babe, because Jen was out in the parking lot waiting on me. I'm like, sorry, I'm still a children's pastor at heart. I had to meet the people. And she's like, yeah, I know. So I'll actually close with this, because people still want me to talk about weight stuff. So remember 1% changes. Here's your 1% change for this week. Prioritize protein. Okay. If you're trying to make a change in what you eat, I talked about adding a little bit of vegetables, getting junk food out of your house last week. So your 1% change this week is prioritizing protein. Protein fills you up. So if you prioritize, and I don't just mean buying it. I mean, eating mostly that when you have meals, is prioritize your meats, prioritize your beans, prioritize protein when you're making your plate. If you're eating spaghetti, get a little less noodles, a little more meat sauce. Okay. A little less noodles, a little more meat sauce, just 1% changes. Don't do it all at once. Just a little bit more. I go to the point that I take a spoon with slots in it and I scoop the meat sauce and I kind of beat it on the pan a little bit to get a little bit of the sauce out of there and keep a little more meat. And I weigh it out. I eat 4 ounces at a time because of my stomach. And that'll help you. It'll help you. Protein shakes are also good. I don't have the brand name that I use, but I drink one a day, and they're not the greatest things in the world. But if you quit eating real chocolate, you'll think they taste like chocolate. You just kind of have to forget what real chocolate tastes like. But they're these pure protein, I think, shakes, and they come in different flavors, and they're all nasty. Except for the chocolate, which is gross. It's not nasty. It's just gross. But I drink those, and I have red meat. I have chicken. I have fish. I have seafood, you know, and stuff like that. And I eat beans. I don't care for beans very much, but I love black beans in my Mexican food. And I eat them in my Chipotle. And when I get my Chipotle bowl, I eat a little bit of rice because it has fiber, but I prioritize the chicken and the cheese and the beans because that's my proteins, right? And so I'll have a little bit of fruit or a slight vegetable, and that makes my meal. So if you're worried about the amount of food you're eating right now, don't worry about that right now. Focus on the priority of the food that you're eating, okay? And that will be a step in the right direction. Later on, we'll talk about portions. We'll talk about calories. We'll talk about all the hard stuff. But right now, we're doing 1% changes. So prioritize your proteins, okay? Meats, beans, every meal, you should have some protein. I mean, if you're hungry, a scoop of peanut butter. A scoop. I mean, a spoon. A spoon of peanut butter, not an ice cream scoop. So anyway, don't forget also NarthexCon 0.5 in Atlanta, June 28th, 4 p.m., 2025. We'd love to see you. If you want more information, it's in Atlanta. NarthexCon.com is the place to go to sign up. It's free. It's going to be great. I'd love to meet you in person if that's anywhere close to you. If it's not, we do it every other year here in St. Louis. So love to see you. Thank you for listening. This show is brought to you by our supporting listeners on Patreon, with special thanks to Carrie Wright and Carrie Bernhardt. Join the community. Become a supporting listener today at patreon.com/GOK. And let me know what you thought about this episode. My email, james@nlcast.com. For everything else, visit gokcast.com. We love you. I love you. And we love you too, whoever we were. And I'll see you next time. God bless. Peace.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.